Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted retailer nationally for 2021.
Oh my word! What an unbelievable goal from Sam Kerr! World class!
Riding with Tudas! Set the tone for Ange and Celtic.
Sixers have had a great night and finish it. Christian takes the catch. And the Melbourne Stars have been absolutely destroyed by the Sydney Sixers.
The 2021 Repco Bathurst 1000 winner is Chaz Mostert.
Oh, they touched and they collided. Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton. How much damage on Hamilton's Mercedes? What has happened there?
7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day. There's some of the highlights of another great weekend in sport. It was a huge weekend for motorsport with both Formula One and Bathurst. Sam Kerr put on a clinic. The Demons had a huge premiership celebration and looking forward to another one next year. Disappointing, though, to say the least, Scoop, for the Stars. But there was so much more, and you'll get your chance to give us your thoughts. Later in the show, we'll open up the lines and we'll take your calls in on the Harcourts open line. 133-693 is the number. And we have some urban myth to give away. Zero alcohol beer to the best caller. But Scoop, let's begin by chatting about rugby league.
Absolutely, Jared. Specifically the Melbourne Storm, who I think, you know, for a long time, 133-693, by the way, if you want to have your say, have been the poster boys for the correct behaviour.
Yep.
For being
almost an unblemished record, haven't they?
Well, yeah, for being really the pinnacle of professionalism. Now, Frank Panisi, a lot of our listeners know, good friend of this show, he has not spoken anywhere about the situation surrounding Brandon Smith, who tomorrow goes into pre-season for day one. It's going to be a pretty tough day for him. And this is a club that, you know, we're not used to speaking about in this light, Jared. Prior to the white powder scandal, which was only a couple of months ago, there were never any issues like this for the Melbourne Storm.
No, we usually talk about them in glowing terms. It's not often we begin with rugby league, but as you said, the first time that Frank has been good enough to join us, we thought we'd elevate it to the top of the program. Frank, welcome to you. It's not often that we speak negatively of your club, but that's the situation you're in. Welcome to you.
No, thanks, Jared. Thanks, Sam. We understand that, and it's pretty hard to defend a lot of those things too. I mean, obviously, we love when we get all the accolades and all the pats on the back that come our way, and which we've obviously received a fair few over the years. But when it's time not to get the brickbats, we've just got to put the helmets on and take them, and more importantly, got to do something about it going forward.
Yes, and you've always been able to do that, respond with winning, and people have written you off forever. But right now, you've lost three absolute stars. And Brandon Smith, I'm not sure how he's going to perform. He's put himself in the spotlight unnecessarily. I mean, he's really, in my view, put his whole future at the club. And I'm talking short term. I know long term he's not there anyway. But it must have been so close to giving him his marching orders. Have you still settled on the fact that you're going to bring him back into the fold? Or has he still got to earn his right to become one of the Storm players again for next year?
Yeah, look, he starts officially back again tomorrow. It's our last group that's start training. We've had the groups come in three. The new player started about a month ago. Our younger group, or our less and more experienced of our 2021 squad, started 2 weeks ago, and then the remainder, which Brandon's part of, starts tomorrow. So it all starts for him tomorrow. They certainly used the word regain. There's whether you call it respect or trust or whatever the word is, there's obviously some work to be done by Brandon, and only Brandon can do that. Not just through words but through actions. So, yeah, he's got some work to do, and it all starts tomorrow for him.
We all make mistakes, and podcasts seem to bring out the worst in a lot of people. They get a bit loose and talking with mates, etc., and want to talk it up and have a bit of a joke. But ultimately, you've had to acknowledge what he said, the drinking culture, etc. It's how did you deal with that, and clearly how are you dealing with the public, with us now, with this allegation of the big drinking culture?
Yeah, look, the podcast as a whole found disappointing, but I found the drinking culture puzzling. I think you only have to look at our record over the last 7 years. We've made seven consecutive prelims. you know, I think four minor premierships, four grand finals, two premierships. We won 19 games on the bounce this year. You don't have those performances over a long period of time if you've got a drinking culture.
Yep.
If you did, I think there'd be a lot of sporting teams in Australia that would be suddenly adopting a drinking culture. So I found those comments puzzling. It's impossible. And I think anyone that's got any type of knowledge of physical performance and you know, the constant use of alcohol, tell you, they just don't go together.
Was it personally disappointing for you and Craig, Frank? Because this kid has been one of you for a long, long time and essentially he's thrown you under the bus.
Well, you're disappointed because you care about someone and someone that has contributed enormously to the club. So I think if it was just a bloke that just flew in, flew out, you wouldn't really give too much thought to it. But it's someone that's been here for 5 years, came as a young player, made his debut here and has given his absolutely all to the club and really contributed, you know. And so that made it disappointing. And look, I haven't heard the podcast, and those type of podcasts, not my go, to be honest. Not just because of this, they're just not my go, those type of podcasts that are done these days. You know, and people tell me that he did say a lot of good things about the club, which is fantastic. But unfortunately, as I've explained to him, you know,
they don't get publicised.
People, they're not worried about the 95% good things he said. They'll focus purely on the 5%, and the 5% of things he shouldn't have said, and he regrets saying them now.
How close did you get to sacking him?
Oh, look, that discussion is, you know, obviously there's just been disappointment. There's a lot of speculation going around, crazy speculation over the weekend about swapping and those type of things. Ultimately, we just let it ride, just clear our emotions, and then waited for Brandon to come back. So Brandon, as I said, just arrived back into Melbourne over the weekend, and he starts officially tomorrow, and then we'll have a chat. He's contracted to the club, and, you know, if he really wants to be here and, you know, and he can show that he wants to be here, you know, that this is where his future will be. So, but, you know, as I said, it's easy just having one or two meetings. He's got a shout over a period of time. So, but there was a lot of disappointed people, and thankfully, no more disappointed than himself for the comments that he made.
So are you refuting that you approached West Tigers to do a swap?
We didn't approach. No, we can't. I can guarantee we approach no club. No, like certainly, when you're in that position, you become you know, as we are, as people think you're vulnerable. So obviously, you will get potentially other clubs contacted. But yeah, some of the, you know, there's again, it's we just got to take a deep breath. It's been a very, very disappointing week on top of a few other things. So we've just got to take a breath, sit down with the player in person rather than over the phone or by text, and have a conversation with him. But, you know, as I said, he's a contracted player and he'll be given an opportunity to show that he really wants to be here.
Given how long you've been involved with this footy club, do you think that the awe of the Melbourne Storm has been impacted by the last few months? Has the gloss gone off the club a little bit? I mean, you've dealt with some pretty serious circumstances. You've had a white powder scandal involving some of your stars, and then one of those stars opens up about, you know, an alleged drinking culture, and he says he was taken out of context. I've listened back. That's what he said. How big an impact do you think, Frank, this has had?
Oh, look, it's something we don't like, and we generally care about the culture. You know, it's been built. You know, cultures aren't built overnight, and built over a season. It takes years and years to build great cultures, and, you know, and this has been built over a long period of time. So, you know, there's a lot of people that have been here in a long time, you know, no longer than Craig. And, you know, I've been, this is my 15th season. We've got a lot of other staff similar that we generally care, and our players as well. I think, you know, they generally care about the culture. So what you'll find, Sam, is an extremely determined group that have basically, you know, seen that we've taken a whack and it hurts, and we care about it. So, you know, whether we've lost our aura, I'm not too sure. All we care about is our culture is restored to where it should be, our high standards and our values that we have. So, yeah, we're certainly not throwing the white flag. If anything, I think you're going to see an extremely determined club, not just on the field, because I'm pretty confident on the field, but, you know, it's off the field too. I think that's the most important thing. I think that's the area we've got to improve in lots of areas, and we're determined to get back to where we know we belong.
So on a positive, a couple of new players, in fact, three new players heading to the club and starting training this week, including Xavier Coates, who's a hell of a player.
He's been exceptionally outstanding during pre-season. He's been here a month now, as all the new players have, and he's training incredibly well. He's you know, leading the pace. Nick Meaney that we signed from the Bulldogs, you know, as a replacement for Nico Hines. Again, he fitted in really well, and he's a little bit older too, so his experience is quite invaluable. Josh King from the Knights, a player that'll, you know, will play similar to Dale Finucane, and by no means we're even thinking of comparing it to Dale, but he's added some real energy. And we've got a couple of young players, the Torren Wishart that we got midway through the last year, who's joined our squad for that but didn't play. He's probably one of our best at training at the moment. And a young kid called Jack Howarth, who was also in our system last year, but just with COVID, got little opportunities. So he'll... They've probably been the standouts, but it's there's what that's, you know, with all the distractions going on, one thing we're really pleased is how the group hasn't been distracted. Their on-field performance has been outstanding. The high standards, as good as I've ever seen it at training. I saw a session on Saturday, which was as tough a session I've seen for a long time. And, you know, they were outstanding. They did everything and beyond. So, yeah, where we are right now, we welcome all the boys back tomorrow. And, you know, so far it's been from a on-field point of view, Jared, it's been a very successful on-field. We just got to fix up the off-field issues.
Well, Frank, I'm not sure we'll talk again on air between now and Christmas, but I'm looking forward to catching up with you at Tommy Ruff's in the next couple of weeks. You've been fantastic for us all year. Good luck and have a great break. All the best.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks, Sam. Thanks for your support during the year. Really appreciate it.
Frank Panisi, the godfather of the Melbourne Storm. Your calls after this.
I think when I saw him, he's obviously shattered with what's happened, because he's been such an exemplary figure in Australian cricket for the last 4 years particularly. You know, his life's changed, obviously. So, but you have to ask him how he's going. All I know is important to go and see him. We talk about looking after our boys, having each other's backs, and it was a no-brainer for me to go and see him.
Well, there's Justin Langer telling us he went and had a chat to Tim Payne, and I cannot believe, Scoop, that he's copped heat over that action, that decision to go and see somebody who is clearly...
Who criticised that?
General criticism.
Was there?
I think across the Twitter sphere going to have a chat to him. But this is Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy. And of course,
he's going to go see the guy that was captain of the team for so long.
Kia, the all-new Kia range is available now. Brendan Julian, Chief of Fox Sports Cricket Coverage, not far away from joining us. Guy's been holding on the longest. So kick us off, Guy. You want to talk about the Ashes?
Yeah, g'day, guys. Am I missing something? Because I can't understand why they've cancelled this Perth test. Why couldn't they just play that as the first test?
Well,
they come in from England, do their quarantine, and then play the game.
Yeah, well, I think that ultimately was what the Emperor tried to orchestrate, and that's a swap for the second test, because they would have been coming out of Queensland, wouldn't have had to quarantine, etc. But unfortunately... it's not quite as simple as that. I thought it was creative from Mark McGowan, but the Sacker poo-pooed that one pretty quickly. Ultimately, it was in his court. He held sway, and ultimately, I think it's fair to say, Scoopy was...
You and I have been saying on this program...
He jumped before he was pushed.
For at least 3 weeks that the Perth test was never going to happen, even when they were confident. Brendan Julian is the main man at Fox Cricket. He's been good enough to join us. He can catch every ball of the Ashes live. It is ad break free. You can stream it on KO. You can also watch it in 4K Ultra HD on Foxtel, which is what I like doing, Jared. And Brendan's on the line. Welcome, Brendan.
G'day, boys. How are you?
We're going well. How good are you at the weather? Just looking down the temperature list, it looks fantastic. 29, 30, 29, 28, and climaxing the final day of 27. The only problem is 70%, 60%, 50%, 60%, 50% chance of a shower. Are we going to get a result, Brendan?
I reckon you will get a result. I mean, if there's a little bit of grass on the pitch and it's sort of swinging around a bit, I reckon the big decision is going to be with Pat Cummins being the bowler and captain now. If he senses a bit of twinge or a bit of tweak in the pitch, he may want to bowl first. I mean, normally, 9 times out of 10, you win the toss, you bat first. That's what batsmen normally do. But I tell you what, if he gets an inkling or there's a delayed start, there's a bit of weather around and it's grassy, you might want to put him in if you win the toss.
Would you?
Don't know. I'd need to be. You'd make that decision about half an hour before you toss the coin.
As a bowler, you would have stuck him. You see a little bit of green grass on that. You'd want to get hold of the new Kookaburra.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Also, I don't reckon it's a bad thing either, because I tell you what, it's up against England's top three, which are pretty ordinary, I reckon. I mean, Joe Root moving down towards the middle of the order is pretty good. Ben Stokes and Josh Butler and Bairstow. But their top order is shabby. So I don't know. I reckon he'll be thinking about it. But what happens is, if they get in there and they bat well on the first day, then you normally cop it as a bowler. But I think it'd be a brave move. Not everyone has always won the toss and batted first. But if there's a bit of grass on it, you might want to do it.
It is a big call for a first-up captain with his first call. If he wins, I reckon he'd almost prefer to lose the toss.
What did Chappelle used to say?
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, you bat. And the 10th time, you think about bowling.
And still bat.
And you still bat.
But don't forget, Chappelle in 1974 always said that. And he bowled first in the first two test matches at the Gabba, then Perth. So, you know, he has got the history
selective memory,
first.
Okay.
He can do it. Exactly. Hey,
Brendan, how much has the tide turned from, say, 2 months ago when we were all sitting here thinking, oh, well, this should be a nice, easy roll over 3 or 4-0 against England? A fair bit's changed since then.
Mate, you're absolutely right, mate. I mean, one, we've flicked their captain, so that changes it all around a bit, which I don't necessarily think is going to have a massive impact on the side. Yes, you don't want to lose your captain, I agree, but I don't think I think Ben Stokes coming out to England, I think that has turned it around significantly for England. I think their bowling is really solid with Anderson and Broad. I think their only issue is probably the top three batsmen. But I definitely think we will go on as favourites, but it won't be a walkover. No doubt about that. It'll be a lot closer than what we think.
Did they make the right call with Travis Head over Usman Khawaja?
Look, I think they did. I think they had to give him some sort of opportunity to at least prove himself. I mean, look, he averages 40 in Test cricket and probably 27 in the last series against England. I don't think he's a lock-in for the whole series, but he will have to bat well. But I think he deserves that run. Uzi has had his chances as well, and he's had his chances to lock in his spot, and he hasn't done that. He's batted well in the Sheffield Shield, so I'm happy with that decision. I don't think, it's a lock-in for the whole five test matches, but certainly for the first two.
Brendan Julian joining us from Fox Cricket ahead of the Ashes. BJ, is Shane Warne's criticism of Mitchell Stark warranted?
Yeah, I think it's a bit tough. I mean, Warney always believes that probably Mitch Stark has not sort of lived up to those expectations. But I'm all for having Mitch Stark in the first test match. I want to see how he's going. I don't think he's bowling that poorly. Yes, I know there are times when he sprays it around and he looks ordinary, but he's that type of bowler. You know, he's that type of bowler that can win you games and then he can go for 60 or 5 overs. So I don't mind that. Being a left armer myself, you cop it a bit if you spray it around, but, you know, if he's on song, he can win you a test match. So I'm happy to see that for the first couple of test matches, no doubt.
West Australia has lost the test match, the deciding test match. Where should it go?
I'd love it to come to Melbourne, to be honest. I'd love it to be a day-nighter in Melbourne. I understand Tasmania want the test match down there, but you're not going to get the crowd down there compared to Melbourne. You're not going to get the financial revenue that Cricket Australia desperately need. Look, I love Tasmania. I love all the people down there, but I would love it to go back to Melbourne for a day-nighter, and hopefully if it was a decider. I just think that Melbourne deserve that. You know, they've been deprived of a lot of sport. They've been crucified in the AFL. I think it's the home of cricket, the MCG, and I would love it to be there. So that would be my vote. I just think the people in Melbourne would support it even after a Boxing Day test match.
What odds, Jared? Framing the market, who's favourite?
I reckon 70% for us, 30% for Tasmania, and 0%,
yeah, that's good.
0% for GMHBA, even though Prime Ministerial candidate Richard Miles, he's called for it to go to Geelong. Trouble is he didn't check with the CEO of the ground, who said, we can't do it. We've got renovations to our stadium.
I reckon Tasmania, $1.40 favourite.
Do you? Where do you come from?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a bit closer than what we think. I don't think it's done and dusted all in Melbourne. I think at this stage, Tassie, the government have got it behind it. I know they're throwing a bit of money at it as well. They lost the Afghanistan test match. So yeah. I think they're in front at the moment.
I reckon.
Where would the broadcasters like to have it? Surely the day-nighters,
Melbourne,
are much more attractive than a half-full stadium down in Tassie.
Well, that's what I do. And weather's always a problem. I mean, you don't want it to be sort of washed out down to Tasmania. Not that it can't be washed out in Melbourne, but I just think visually it would look great. And the first time you've got a day-night test match in Melbourne, I think the people would get out and support it. I think you'd get 40, 50,000 people there, no problem. We're down in Tassie at night time. It could be a lot colder. You're not too sure about it. So, yeah, that's my gut feeling.
The one thing we do know, if they do get the Ashes test, and good luck to them if they do, it would be a huge test for cricket down there. They've had poor crowds over the journey.
Huge test for a test.
Yeah. They've always been up against C-grade sides, if you like. So this is an Ashes test.
That'd be huge.
If they couldn't fill it 3 out of the 5 days, then question marks would be the foot.
It would be. It would be question mark. But what I'd do is I'd try and allow people travelling from Melbourne down to Tassie to make it a really big corporate event. I mean, I'd be trying to sell it that way as well. I don't think you necessarily have to sell it to all Tasmanian people. I mean, make it accessible to people that can travel from Melbourne straight down there in an hour flight and make it a test match like they do in Adelaide. A lot of people travel to Adelaide to go and watch it. I mean, a lot of country people from Victoria could get down to Tasmania and watch it. You know, I think you've got to throw it open to other states as well, not just Tasmania.
Jump on the Spirit. Salamanca will be pumping.
It will be.
You've had a couple of quiet nights there, Jared, after some long boat trips.
Yeah, maybe they could time it with the Sydney to Hobart crew just getting through.
It'd be great. Weather will be beautiful.
Ask you if Alex Carey should have been told he only has 2 test matches? Why wouldn't you say you're in and we're going to back you all the way?
Well, I think they have said that. I think a blanket sort of decision was made that they want to just announce it for the first 2 test matches. But I think in the back of their mind, George Bailey's indicated that he's loyal. I think Justin Langer's loyal. I think they've made the right decision. Yep. I reckon that's spot on that they've picked him. I think he could turn into a really, really good player. I mean, I'm not sure if he's the best keeper in the country at the moment, but certainly Gilly came through that scenario and did a really good job. So I think they've done that in the back of his mind, mate. I'd be surprised if they changed it, even if he didn't start that well.
So just before we let you go, what's our weakness? If England's main weakness is depth in the middle order, what do you see as ours?
Well, I think our weakness is the top of the order. I think probably 1 and 2. We're not sure about Dave Warner, how he's going. And I think also our 5 is a bit of a problem. So I think our batting is an issue. I think it's a situation where I think both countries' of batting is not strong. But that's our issue. Our batting's the issue. Our bowling's fine. We'll knock over England. No, don't worry about that. We need to get runs out of the top order, which would be 1 and 2. We need to get runs out of our number 5 as well. That'll be the crucial problem. We're not going to go well in this test series where we're not getting enough runs in the first innings. If we get runs in the first innings, then that'll look after itself. But those are the pressure points for us.
Brendan, thanks so much for coming on. Looking forward to watching you on Fox throughout the Ashes.
Good on you, boys. Thanks.
Brendan Julian there from Fox Cricket. So that's interesting, Jared. Like, listening to that, you wouldn't be back in the draw unless, you know, the first test there's rain.
Well, rain is the reason. I mean,
no, I know, but I'm saying drawn test matches that have 5 days of good weather, I don't know if we're going to see many.
Well, if both sides are weak in the batting department
and fairly strong in bowling,
it's going to be a result each time. Save the weather.
As we go to the break, it's time for news headlines with Tony Tardio. Welcome back to Sports Day. Jared, did you see the vision of Jake Lever at Melbourne training today? The club's saying he fainted. It sort of looks like he was on his haunches.
Yeah, he sort of collapsed
after a run, and then he sort of just decided, I'm going to lie down. And the medicos sort of attended to him for about 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the official line from a club spokesperson is that he went too hard too early.
Okay. Well, let's hope there's a little bit left in the tank.
What would that be down to, Dr.
No Ewing? Idea. No, they had a big weekend scoop.
Get on the beers.
Oh, Zoe.
That's unfair.
That is unbelievable.
That's very unfair. Just going back to the Tassie test, I'm looking at the crowds, the biggest crowds. I've done a lot of games. I reckon I've done 30 games at down at Bellerive Oval.
Right, you love Hobart.
And I've seen a number of good crowds. I haven't seen a cracking crowd, but the biggest crowds.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a ripper.
So what does it hold? 20,000.
Holds 20.
Yeah.
In 2016, there was a almost full for North Melbourne and Richmond.
Oh, was that game? It was about 2 degrees on a Friday night.
2015, similar, North Melbourne and Richmond. You know, we're talking 17,500, nearly 18,000.
Yeah, it's a great crowd.
But for cricket, the only decent crowds, and they're really good crowds, have been BBL or One Day International, sort of 16,000 to 18,000.
So the record, when the Hurricanes are playing.
Yeah, the record is 18,149. That's post the Ricky Ponting stand being built. That was in 2016. So you'd want to be getting your 16,000 to 18,000 2 or 3 days in a row to justify the test against England. That one against South Africa, that doesn't feature. And that was 2016.
The Tyre Power Sports Update there for Tyre Power. Summer Scorcher sale is now on. Formula One title race. Well, she's going down to the wire. Peter Windsor is going to join us from Europe next.
Into the first corner for
Verstappen has to bail out. Lewis Hamilton has to bail out. Verstappen ends that sequence with a bigger lead over Lewis Hamilton.
Crazy.
Oh. Oh, they touched and they've collided. Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton. How much damage on Hamilton's Mercedes? What has happened there? Hamilton is going to give us level pegging in the championship as he comes home to win the first Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. It's Hamilton and Mercedes on top.
Yes, welcome back to Sports Day. It was all happening at the Saudi Arabia Grand Prix. It means we go into Abu Dhabi next week, all tied up at the top. Hamilton won, Max Verstappen second. And as Max Verstappen stormed off
the podium,
Jared refused to celebrate. I loved the words of the commentator, David Croft, and I might use them here. If the gloves weren't off now, they certainly are now. If they weren't off before, they certainly are now. Peter Windsor is a man that a lot of our listeners will know. He's a Formula One reporter. He was, of course, the former boss of Williams. He was their team manager, and he joins us live to speak about what was, Peter, a crazy weekend in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, crazy weekend. I think we all thought it was going to be pretty much a pressure cooker, but I don't think anybody really anticipated what we saw yesterday. It was just stunning.
Peter, can you apportion blame in this collision, or is it simply down to a miscommunication on many parties?
I think had Lewis known that he was going to be inheriting the lead and the Max was going to move over for him, I think probably he would have been, you know, out of the, he wouldn't have been right behind him and he would have been on the other side of the road and the collision wouldn't have happened. Having said that, in my mind, there's no excuse for braking on a straight line, regardless of the situation anywhere in the world, you know, in a road car, let alone in a racing car. And I think there was a bit of, you know, we saw it in Max's driving all day, which was, you know, if we both get taken out here or something happens, the bigger loser is going to be Lewis, because at that point, Max, of course, was ahead on points. So I think that coloured Max's driving, and I think that was unfortunate. A lot of people would say, wow, wasn't it brilliant? But, you know, the bottom line is he was over the top, I think, in a couple of areas. And that was because of the point situation, I think. And, you know, if Lewis had ended up not finishing that race and Max had limped home in third or fourth, that would have been a great result for Max, of course.
Can I ask you about the qualities, the capabilities of both drivers? Hamilton drives in the Mercedes, the AMG engine. Verstappen, the Red Bull with the Honda engine. If Hamilton was racing in the Red Bull and Verstappen was racing in the Mercedes, would it be as even?
Oh yeah, it would be very even. I mean, these two guys, I put Charles Leclerc somewhere near them, and maybe Lando Norris not that far away. But I think these two guys are the best guys in the world right now. And regardless of, you know, what you may say about test drivers or having the best car, you know, a driver creates a great racing car if he's a great racing driver, and that's what we've seen with both of them. And you're going to look at, say, Sergio Perez or Valtteri Bottas to see what would happen if they didn't have frontline drivers in those cars. And I think if they swapped, it would be very similar. But I think the one thing that showed up yesterday was Lewis has this ability also of staying out of trouble, of protecting his world, if you like. And I don't think Max has that. Maybe he will get it in the future, but this is something that Lewis was superb yesterday in not getting hit by Max or Esteban Ocon or anybody else around him. And he still had a car. Admittedly, it was pretty battle scarred, but he still had a car with which he could set fastest lap and win the race. And with all the stuff going on, I thought that was outstanding. That was sort of Niki Lauda against Alan Prost. You know, that was a brilliant bit of driving by Lewis. And he was aggressive when he needed to be aggressive as well.
So if you're back in your former role in the sport as the team manager for Williams and both drivers were available and you needed somebody to head up your team, would you take Hamilton?
Oh, yeah. I would have taken Hamilton even before McLaren did. When he had half a chance of doing half a season in 2006, I would have put him in the car. And they didn't at that point. But, the guy, even in Formula 3, Formula 2, it was very clear he was outstanding. He was superb. I think I think Max comes from a completely different background. He's got quite an aggressive father. He's got Helmut Marko of Red Bull around him. And I think those two guys probably would have been winding up Max quite a lot going into this race right. of, you know, Max, this is your chance. You can do it here. You know, if Lewis doesn't finish, yeah. there would have been a bit of that. And you know, that's, and Lewis isn't open to that sort of thing. He just does his own racing. You know, he's got an incredible racing brain. Incredible. You know, he's just got this feel for making everything very simple and not allowing the occasion to get on top of him. And given his status, you know, his global status, that's pretty impressive. You know, you're talking Roger Federer type
yep.
ability here to, you know, just to remain the athlete and not be affected by it all.
I'm sure if you asked Max, Jared, what his thoughts on the inaugural track at Saudi Arabia was, he probably wouldn't get a nice answer. But what did you make of it? Did you think the other drivers liked it? The first time we've seen the track, it had more turns than anything we've seen before.
Yeah, no, I think it was a great circuit in the sense that it had a lot of fast corners. And that's when and most drivers, if you ask them about that track, will say, yeah, fabulous circuit. We loved it because all good racing drivers love fast corners. Mm. They don't want Mickey Mouse slow corners with lots of chicanes. And that's what that circuit gave them. What it also brought, of course, because it's a sort of street track in a way, there was a lot of concrete walls and a lot of blind entries. And because of the shape of the lap, there was and the condition of the tires in qualifying particularly, everybody had to do a lot of slow laps to get the tire temperatures really well balanced. And because of that, it was unbelievably dangerous in terms of these blind corners and suddenly finding a slow car in the middle of the road. And I think all the drivers, when the dust settles, will be thinking, yeah, you know, as much as this track is fun to drive on your own out there, just enjoying the thrill of being in a racing car, the reality is when you put 20 cars in there, half of which are doing 3 miles an hour, it is a seriously dangerous circuit. And I think that's something that, you know, will always colour this track.
One final one, if you would, Peter, just on our local guy, Daniel Ricciardo. Where do you see him at in his career?
Well, I think he's got a good bank account now, which is good. So yeah. In theory, he should sleep well at night. You know, that you've got to assume that's one of the reasons he left Red Bull and went to Renault. He got a large chunk of money. I mean, I think that to do that, what he did, to leave a race-winning team, you know, race in, race out. You know, if you're driving for Red Bull, you got half a chance of winning the Grand Prix. To leave that situation to go to Renault proactively, and he made that decision himself. You know, is a big thing to do if you haven't yet won a world championship.
Yep.
And that's what he's done. And I think that it's not the psychological effect of that. It is the actual effect of that. Mm. And to then go to a team where he hasn't got a chance of winning a Grand Prix, i.e. Renault, but he's got a lot of money, is a completely different situation for him as a racing driver. He could walk around thinking, well, I haven't got to beat Max Verstappen every day, but equally, he hasn't got a chance of winning the Grand Prix either. And now he's at McLaren. I think he went to McLaren thinking, now I can be Danny Ricciardo again. I've got that out of my system. I'm a race driver. It's going to be brilliant to be at McLaren, get the team around me. And of course, what he never really factored in was how quick Lando Norris is. And Lando had out-qualified Carlos Sainz both years. And he's a Lewis-type driver in many ways. He's got very soft edges to his driving. He's really, really good, natively good. And I don't think that into Daniel's kind of thinking too much. Mm. And I think he's pretty shocked at how good Lando is. And of course, when your teammate is quicker than you or slightly quicker ever, it's always annoying. And that, you know, he's in that situation now. So answer to your question, I think, you know, he's in a good home. I think they all love him there. And he's a great guy. Everybody in Formula One loves Daniel. And they all want to see him do well. And Monza was a brilliant thing. But in terms of him becoming a Lewis Hamilton or a Max Verstappen, life is very difficult for him because if that McLaren really becomes a championship winner, you know, Lando Norris is going to take big advantage of it.
Peter, great to have you on. Appreciate your time.
Yeah. All right, mate. Great to talk to you.
Terrific.
Peter Windsor there, Formula One reporter, former boss of Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Day. Sam Kerr, what an unbelievable performance from her. In the FA Cup final, Chelsea versus Arsenal.
Now one for Kerr to chase up against Beattie. She's got the pace to get there first. Wooden Moy rather. Can she find room for a shot this time, Kerr? She has! Oh, and it's crept in! Finally for Sam Kerr! So that's Kerr going. She's onside as well here, Sam Kerr. Oh, my word! What an unbelievable goal from Sam Kerr!
Oh, my word, indeed. That chip, the second goal, was something you would only see from a very, very small portion of players, Jared. I mean, that was David Beckham, you know, Andrei Shevchenko sort of stuff. I think that there's a fair argument that she may go down as our greatest ever soccer player. She's the best player in the world right now. She's in Bosnic, Schwarzer, Kjul, Viduka territory from on.
Finish the show with an editorial. I like it, Scoop. Going to be a great day tomorrow. We're back. Wind is back.
Already 7 o'clock. 16 degrees tomorrow.
16
Summer
degrees.
Going well. See you tomorrow on Sports Day.
Interesting answer on Daniel Ricciardo.
Very.